Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Apparently Al Gore's on vacation. Jim Garrity is on the phone since our internet connection is not up to speed as it should be. But Jim, some good news, bad news, crazy news as usual. Let's start with the good news, and a lot of folks might think this is frivolous given the huge challenges we face right now, but I think it is a microcosm of the fight that continues to go on here in Washington between us being allowed to make the decisions in our lives and the government deciding these things for us. Here is the big issue of the day, whether or not the House of Representatives will vote to repeal the ban on incandescent light bulbs, the good kind, the original kind, the ban set to kick in at the beginning of next year. Here's Texas Congressman Joe Barton.
If you're Al Gore and you want to spend $10 a light bulb, more power to you. We're saying let people make their own choices. Why in the world does the federal government have to tell people what kind of lights to use in their home?
And here's Democrat Henry Waxman.
Compact fluorescents now. You don't have to buy them on January 1, 2012. You can buy the better incandescent bulbs or LEDs, neither of which contain mercury. That's more choice, not less.
Yeah, just that those other choices either make you deal with a poison if you break your bulb or pay exponentially more for them. I think a lot of people, myself included, are kind of hoarding the 75-cent version of Thomas Edison's invention, Jim, which seemed to last and work pretty well for 130 years. I'm not really sure why we don't have the opportunity to keep having that choice. The thing that I really loved was the quote from the Secretary of Energy, Stephen Chu, saying, quote, "We are taking away a choice that continues to let people waste their own money." I want to have the choice to waste my own money, whether Stephen Chu thinks it's a good idea or not. What do you think?
Well, you know, how dare Americans choose to waste their own money? As we all know, that's the job of Congress. Finally, we do have an answer, however, to the question of how many Americans does it take to screw in a light bulb? And the answer is 537, one American, 435 members of the House, 100 senators, and one president to sign into law detailed instructions of the kind of bulbs they're allowed to use. If you choose to use the fluorescent bulbs and they last longer and you think it's cost efficient, hey, you know, God bless you. Go right ahead. Thomas Edison would give you the thumbs up. It's the idea that we went from, hey, here's a neat new form of light bulb, to banning the old one. It was like, doesn't this come on the market like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, Greg?
Yes, exactly.
I mean, like overnight, we went from, hey, here's a better, it's not like, it'd be like if they came up with an iPhone or a new version of the iPhone and they banned all the old ones.
Right.
It wasn't energy efficient enough. One of the things about innovation is you got to let it take its pace. And the idea that government can come in and make people do things better, I think Chu's statement is very revealing. Finally, the last thing I'd like to do is I just love the name of it put together by Congressman Joe Barton, the Better Use of a Light Bulb Act, or just the Bulb Act for short. I like that.
Yeah.
Cute acronym.
Exactly right. And of course, the Democrats will talk about how this is a waste of our time. This is not what the American people care about. And couldn't we be spending this time on more important things? Well, a congressional debate, for the most part, lasts a couple hours. So I'm not really sure how much is going to be resolved on these other issues like the debt ceiling or these other massive issues in just a couple of hours. So I say go ahead and repeal the light bulb ban and let the Americans have a little bit of freedom back. Hopefully it'll not only get through the House, but through the Senate. And if it doesn't, well, maybe we can attach it to irrelevant legislation like the Democrats love to do. So we'll see. On to the bad martini now, and on to foreign affairs. It's been a long time, Jim, since Libya or anybody else sponsored the bad martini. It used to be a daily occurrence. But over to Pakistan now, and of course, ever since the killing of bin Laden, we learned that he was living kind of in plain sight near a major military academy in Abbottabad, Pakistan, that was pretty clear that at least somebody was either harboring him or at least not going after him. And so there was a lot of calls really from both sides of the aisle to pull back funding, foreign aid from Pakistan. And the threat still out there could hold back about $800 million from approximately $2 billion in security aid to Pakistan in a show of displeasure over Pakistan's lack of cooperation. In response, not shockingly, Pakistan's ready to pull away troops from the Afghan border and really reduce its role in this entire war. So I'm not sure what we've accomplished here, but I'm pretty sure it's not helping us crush the Taliban and Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, and by the way, Greg, I'm kind of struck that all of this occurs even when we have a president who's willing to pronounce it Pakistan in the local, you know, parlance, so that even with that dramatic outreach, I was struck this morning, I'm reading in the print version of the Washington Post an editorial that is kind of whacking the Obama administration for making public demands to Pakistan. And it said that, you know, look, we're you know, apparently getting much more vocal about this. When they're not cooperating, we're making much more noise about it. And the fear is that it's going to worsen what little cooperation there is. Well, one of the things I'm just going to note here is it's possible, in fact, it's pretty darn likely, that there really isn't any great strategy to handle Pakistan. One of the persons who described it is that there are two Pakistans. One is marginally friendly to you, one hates you, and you never know who you're dealing with at any given moment. And that kind of is, you know, the problem in a nutshell. I would hope when we see Republicans talking about this on the campaign trail that they talk about it in a realistic way, which is to say that there is no simple, easy solution that's going to get us exactly what we want. I think what's kind of striking about the Obama administration is that how much it'll go off the radar screen for long stretches of time, like the possibility of a uprising endangering the nuclear weapons and stuff like that. And then they get tougher, and it doesn't seem like we're getting much further than they are. In other words, throughout the 2007-2008 campaign, there was this tone of, oh, you know, if you just put us in charge, things will be so much better, and lo and behold, here we are. And perhaps, you know, the relationship with Pakistan has perhaps never been worse. And one of the things, I just kind of like a little bit of humility as we address this issue, because Obama is inevitably going to say, well, look, you know, these things are hard. This is a complicated relationship. Well, no kidding, Mr. President. Some of us were saying this, you know, back in 2007-2008. Inevitably, the temptation of oversimplifying or believing that by sheer force of personality a new president can get better results from Pakistan is the temptation is always going to be there. I hope Republicans avoid it. But I also hope that American people do remember who was convinced that just by having the name, you know, Barack Hussein Obama, and by having spent time in a Muslim country from when he was 6 to 10, who is going to have this wonderful, unique relationship with the Muslim world that is, you know, as you can, everyone can see where we are today.
We're still one speech away, apparently, despite all the speeches that we've heard. We're still one speech away. And Jim, you know, kids have recurring nightmares. I know one of yours from recent political days has been the brief but albeit loud congressional tenure of one Democratic Congressman, Alan Grayson, who was mercifully trounced by the aptly named Daniel Webster in last year's midterm campaign. Unfortunately, Mr. Grayson has decided that despite losing by, I think, 17 points, it's a really good idea for him to once again seek that seat in Florida's 8th Congressional District. He announced it on The Edge Show on MSNBC, so at least 10 people are now aware that he's running for Congress again in 2012. And just in case anyone wondered whether he's mellowed since he left Congress, no.
The president should be saying to people, the Republican Party is cruel.
Yeah.
The Republican Party is bigoted. The Republican Party cares only about tax breaks for the rich.
Well, there you go. There's that conciliatory tone that is going to bring everyone together, and I'm sure will bring him back into Congress, Jim.
This is a typically good nomination for the crazy martini. I see kind of a silver lining to this. The first is one of his campaign platforms is, quote, ending all U.S. wars, unquote. So I guess, you know, perhaps he'd be on the side of a lot of Republicans who aren't convinced that Libya is worth the effort. And then secondly, I assume this would mean full pullout from Afghanistan, full pullout from Iraq, et cetera, et cetera. And anytime we can tie that to the Democratic Party, I think that's good. And the third thing, which is kind of interesting, is that today, just earlier today, Orlando Police Chief Val Demings is apparently the preferred candidate of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. The fact that Grayson is not the preferred choice of the DCCC I find kind of fascinating. And so the idea of a good, messy Democratic primary will be wonderful news for Dan Webster. And I think, you know, look, if the idea of politics is to have your most appealing, you know, face as prominent as possible and to have the least appealing face of the opposition as prominent as possible, Alan Grayson being involved in Democratic politics can only be good news for the Republican Party.
Absolutely right. So, yeah, let's hope for a pretty uncivil Democratic primary, and then hopefully that'll leave a bruised nominee for Dan Webster, who's obviously a major upgrade in that district from Alan Grayson, who was, I was going to say, borderline insane, but I'm not even sure borderline's fair there. So, Jim?
You know, he doesn't believe in border security, so I don't think we really can even classify. I think the insanity and the sanity just go over the open border back and forth. So
exactly right. Well, it'll be interesting, at least, as that race gets underway. Jim, hopefully we'll be back up in 21st Century Technology tomorrow. We'll talk to you then.
I'll prepare the carrier pigeons just in case.
Jim Carity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.